And now we have a surprise interview I wasn't expecting to do this morning, but I've got Cedric Whiteri on the line. And Cedric, tell us where you are right now.
Good morning, Whangaroa. I'm currently calling you from the capital city of Kiev in Ukraine.
So we talked to you last year? And you were trying to get over there chasing up an old commander of yours or something along those lines?
Absolutely, yes.
And
we did last year, yes.
Yeah, and I hadn't heard anything since then, so I didn't know what had happened. So it was a complete surprise to me when you just called me just now saying that you're in the capital city of Ukraine. How are you doing over there? And what are you doing?
Well, I flew into country on the 29th of April through Warsaw via Doha, Qatar. And, yeah, I've been here in Ukraine ever since then. I originally started out doing aid deliveries and aid supply work, primarily with the first organisation for the first month, one of the NGO groups here, called Ukraine Aid Direct. And so they primarily deal in supplying medical supplies directly to the front lines, covering the entire eastern border of the current battle lines out in the eastern regions. So that's anywhere from the capital, Kiev, Kharkiv, and all the way south down to Mykolaiv, Kherson, and Odessa. And I've been doing that for over a month and a bit, and that's with the most urgent medical supplies required for first aid stations, clinics, doctors, basically anywhere we were directed to go, we go and take these supplies to them. Generally, those supplies would consist of medical swabs, drapes of all sorts, a lot of sanitary products, and a lot of tube connectors that they use in operating theatres and out in the field.
Right, okay.
But it's in pretty dangerous zones. Back then, at the time, Kherson City, which is still under continued bombardment from the Russian forces, because they're on the opposite side of the river from the city itself. So, northern range of snipers, drone attacks, and artillery, including missiles. So, it's probably one of the most contested areas that I had to work inside and deliver medical aid directly into the city. Let's just say the trip in is very nerving, but. I'll put it down to my military skills and the good use of tactical driving, i.e. as fast as I possibly can move the van.
Who have you been working for technically for that? Like, you're coming under somebody's command, or what's the story?
I spread myself across four or five NGO groups, which are non-government organisations, or civilian entities. Basically formulated here at the start of the war. I associated myself with the ones that are still here since the beginning of the war. So we have the primary group I started with, Ukraine Aid Direct, and they're made up of a bunch of volunteers from around the world, from Sweden to America, South Africa, Ireland, Britain, Netherlands, pretty much a good complement of Europeans in that one there, including the odd Kiwi when they get through. Following that, I work for Mission Ukraine UK, which is an amalgamation of Ukrainians and UK personnel working together. And again, all of these groups are civilians. And their primary role is delivering military vehicle, well, any kind of vehicle to military units across the AFU on an individual unit-by-unit case.
Right.
So we're not supplying the entire armed forces of Ukraine. It's as and when these units apply to Mission Ukraine UK. So after that, that work involved purely bringing vehicles down from London, directly from London into Ukraine to an undisclosed location where they are outfitted with the requisites of the units that are applying. So, for example, it might be a customised 4x4 four-wheel drive used for casualty collection points or casualty evacuations, whereby they would have customised a vehicle with black tinting, light armour, reinforced suspensions, Also, with a canopy over the back, you'd have black lighting on the inside to be able to conduct treatment en route to the next drop-off location, which is either a hospital or forward operating medical base and or another ambulance.
Sounds serious.
And we did, yes, yeah. So, as I say, they were customised to the requisites of each unit that it applied. My last delivery was a Tronka field ambulance from Poland. We picked that up from Lviv, and I drove that one down with a co-driver from the UK into a place called Zaporizhia, which is where the nuclear power plant that's currently occupied by the Russians. I went into that city there and to another undisclosed location in order to drop that off to a combat medical team there.
And Cedric,
on behalf.
Cedric, how is the population over there at the moment? What's their, like, should we say, what's their morale like at the moment?
Well, for the general public, by all accounts, its life is normal. They've been under sustained pressure from the Russians since February the 24th, 2022. And basically, life continues as normal.
Right.
Despite the missile attacks. Like, we had, for the last 3 days, missiles coming into Kiev itself, and it's been on the outskirts of the outer regions of the city. A couple have made it through, but the rest have been shot down. But the mood of the people is basically life continues on. Even when the alerts, the air raid alerts go off across the cities and that, nobody's rushing to bomb shelters or anything like that. Just don't do that either. I had to the other night, though, because the information we were getting through our alerts was an imminent threat on the city itself. So for the first time in 3 and a bit months, I actually went down into the subway 98 metres below ground in the city and waited it out there with those that were up around that time. So it was an attack about 11 o'clock at night, and the curfew kicks in at 12. And, yeah, I sat down in the subway until the all clear was given.
It's amazing how adaptable people... It sounds like people are so adaptable, like life continues as normal. It's a new normal, but everyone's kind of adapted.
Yeah, it's a new normal, and people are not afraid no more. They don't react in the way that they used to, at least up to a year and a half ago, where the panic would be obvious. But now it's just life carries on. If you're having a coffee in the morning and one of those alerts come through, you just carry on having your coffee and your breakfast.
Wow.
That's the same.
Yeah. What are your plans, Cedric, for the future over there?
Okay, well, I've recently finished up working the aid groups and now have joined the Armed Forces of Ukraine, and that involves getting your paperwork done first, so that's taken the whole week and a bit in another location. I can't say where, but from there, well, right now I'm just in a wait out process where I'm waiting to hear back from a particular battalion commander who won't offer me a contract into the Armed Forces of Ukraine. So, basically I'm doing some PT around the city at the moment. Just keep my physical training up and prepared, ready to head back out to the front. This time as a volunteer soldier.
As a volunteer soldier, and tell us about originally what your mission was when you when I talked to you last year. You had something you wanted to do, to get over and do. Do you want to just talk about that?
Sure thing. Yeah. So originally, I actually came into Ukraine last year and during the winter period, right on the end of winter, going into spring. So March, I arrived in Ukraine and originally intended to join the International Foreign Legion of Defence Force. I spent practically 5 minutes of my time here and there and had seen the way things were going with inside the particular unit I was involved with. So I decided to get out of Dodge to save my own life because it was looking like getting sent to my death. So I had returned to Raglan and New Zealand and regathered my thoughts and reorganised the plan and began to work away as normal to fundraise to get back over here for myself. So the intention was from there to return and conduct aid work with inside Ukraine, in whatever way or shape or form that would look. And as it turns out, I've been able to research a lot of the groups over here, the NGO groups, and have comfortably slotted myself in within a day of arriving in country into Ukraine Aid Direct.
Right.
So everything worked out quite well, by all accounts. And basically, third day in country, I was doing my first run from the Medyka border crossing, which is between Poland and Ukraine. A small settlement called Medyka, and that's just up the road from a place called Przemyśl in Poland. And I entered Ukraine there and began delivering medical aid, as the Ukraine Aid Direct has a warehouse sitting just on the other side of the fence of the border in Poland, where we will collect our medical supplies and run it directly into Ukraine wherever we needed to go. So that first run was commenced into Kyiv, followed up by the second run a few days later into a town near Kherson called Mykolaiv, and then, many, many other places after that. But everything went according to plan so far, but up until the current situation where I am, finished up with the aid work, and I've had to find other means to survive here, so becoming a volunteer soldier for Ukraine seemed to be the way to go.
Okay. So you did talk about, originally when I talked to you, there was it like a former commander or someone had been over there and had, I think, did you say they died and you wanted to try and return the body? Was that, I can't quite remember the story.
So it wasn't a commander, it was in regards to, the other purpose of coming back to Ukraine was to help in repatriation efforts of one Corporal Dominic Abilene.
Mm.
So this is not known to his family, so this is news as I speak it now.
Yeah,
I have not spoken to the family, because there's no real particular point due to the circumstances on the ground here. Don't allow for foreigners to have that kind of access. And at the same time, where he was killed within Avdiivka region, prior to the Russian push that had commenced this year through that region up to where they are now, there was just no possibility in going into Russian-occupied territory in the Avdiivka region, or city itself in the Donetsk Oblast.
Yeah.
So, initially it was to help in any repatriation efforts for any fallen soldiers, and him being the very first that was killed in action, followed by Andrew Bagshaw, who was another Kiwi expat, ex-military, that was on his way to another place called Soledar, which is above the town of Bakhmut, just a little wee ways up north from it, and he was kidnapped. Last we knew, he was kidnapped on his way into Soledar, him and another guy, another foreigner, and they were both killed but returned by the Russians eventually.
Okay.
Yeah. But the third person was probably the most coveted one through the media of New Zealand, was young Kane Tetai. Now, two of the members there were members of 2nd 1st Battalion Royal New Zealand Infantry Regiment, and it is with a heavy heart that I talk about these two members, as I am also a former member of the 2nd 1st Battalion, rifleman, soldier.
Mm.
But he was our third Kiwi lost in action over here, also killed in the Avdiivka region just prior to the Russian counter-offensive, where they pushed up through to their current locations, as I speak, there in Constantina and the X amount of kilometres away from now another city called Pokrovsky, which is under heavy artillery bombardment as we speak.
Mm.
But yeah, my idea was to help out wherever I can in terms of repatriation efforts for any of our fallen soldiers volunteering here in Ukraine. But unfortunately, things work a little different on the ground here, and The only one that's to be recovered yet is Corporal Dominic Abilene.
Right, so you have had some success with that?
No success at all, because he's still inside occupied territory.
Oh, okay,
well,
sorry.
Behind enemy lines.
Okay, yeah. It sounds like quite a hard mission.
Oh, it is.
It might need to be the conclusion of fighting before that gets resolved, would it?
Well, lawfully wise, you can't be touched, and you would have to wait till either the Russians clear out or Ukraine fight their way back through into Avdiivka and further past there, pushing back towards the borders. Otherwise, there's absolutely no chance of recovering young Dominic.
Okay.
Not in the foreseeable future anyway.
Yeah. And so,
we could even find him.
Yeah. So right now, you kind of need a little bit of support from back home, do you?
Yes. I've been a bit of a catch-22 where once I left the aid groups, I no longer have funding through those particular groups. And I've been living off a couple of donations a week from New Zealand, from some friends and colleagues I used to work with for, and also one ex-military territorial guy down in South Island, and one Ukrainian who actually lives in Hamilton there. It's part of a Ukrainian, the Waikato Ukraine Association Incorporated.
Yeah,
I can't remember the name to be exact, but he's a working member in our society, working out of Hamilton.
Right.
And he's also just recently come on board as a donor to help look after the living costs, such as accommodation, travel, and food. So, yeah, I'm really, really working hard to budget every single cent and dollar to make it go as far as I can, but it's just becoming a bit beyond that capability to do that. The funds are very small, roughly around 180 and or less a week now. I'm hoping to find some support from the community I've worked hard for over the many years. And I think a lot of people still remember me from Raglan. Was your local Māori warden under the Raglan Māori Wardens Charitable Trust up until the passing of our esteemed leader, John Bishop.
Mm.
And then I've been doing a lot of other work, such as Raglan Carriers, doing the both courier and truck driving for them, and then eventually through to Peter Baker Transports, where I also delivered to Raglan, and then eventually out there, Goodman Fielder, doing the milk supply runs and dairy for all the cafes and restaurants and supermarkets out there in Raglan. So the last tenner, if everyone remembered me in the big blue truck with the big blue milk, or blue and white with the big Meadow Fresh milk bottle on the side, that was your boy running around town near the early hours of the morning and whatnot, keeping Raglan supplied.
Yeah. I know you had
pretty good at.
You had a give a little set up at one point. Is that still operating?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Since closed that down because it brought some unwanted tension.
Oh, yeah.
Basically from the Ukrainian government. So I had to close that down. I've just been living off my own funds over here when I'm not on contract with anyone. So I came to Ukraine in April with $4,000 in my back pocket after paying for flights and accommodation and to get through into Ukraine. And that has run out. And as I say, I've been living off four donors, and now it's down to two donors in this current week. So I do need a bit of support from home. If I can drum up $50 is good enough from at least six people, would be more than enough to live here in Ukraine and continue on
the
new line.
How long would that be for, Cedric?
At this stage, it looks like roughly only a month till I get situated with a placement into a military unit. And that could be doing anything from close weapon support, i.e. using an automatic grenade launcher and suppressing the Russians and supporting the assault groups to transport and logistics. But up until that point, when I signed the contract, I'm under my own steam, and I have to find a way to keep the living costs going here for myself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, Cedric, it's been good to get you on the air this morning and tell people your story, where you are, what you got up to, what you want to achieve over there. And you've sent me some emails, so I'll need to take some time. I've got my show to do for the next hour and a half, and then at some point today I'll get in and get a response to you about what you've emailed me. But, yeah, we'll let people know how they can support once we get something sorted out online, I guess.
Yeah, so about a month long is all the time I really need for a bit more financial support, and I should be sitting right after that. Signing on to a contract with the military does come with a regular pay spread out over a month's period, and you're looking at the maximum of 120,000 Ukrainian dollars, which would equate to a little over $4,500. But that depends on what position you are situated in at the front lines. So just to break it down quickly, there are three lines of defence, or four actually. So you have line zero, which is basically you're the guy in the trench defending against the Russians. And then you go back from there to line one, which is a defensive position that supports the defence systems in front of you. And then you have line two, which is the rear of line one, which is more or less where you do your casualty evacuation points and you're in less danger, is to say. And then you got line three, which basically when you start hitting your towns and villages and that,
yeah,
where there's a field of hospitals, etc., and reserve military. You get paid differently according to what line you're on and how long you're on that line.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Line one is the bulk maximum of 120,000, and then it decreases dramatically after that.
And depending on how risky your life becomes, basically, by the sounds of it.
Pretty much. That would summarise it in a nutshell, yes.
Yeah, okay.
The less risk, the less pay. The maximum risk, the max pay you receive.
Yeah. All right, well, look, Cedric, it's time for me to wrap up here, so I got other things to do on the show this morning, but good to chat to you, and we'll be in touch, and good luck.
I appreciate your time, Aaron, and good morning, Whangaroa. It's your boy here. We're doing well and surviving, and I hope to speak with everyone and in the community at large again in the coming days.